Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by an old friend, Patrick McDermott, who's today Vice President Commercial Sales and Relationship Banking for First Bank. I've known Patrick for years since growing up, and I've seen his career and his trajectory, and it's been quite remarkable. But Patrick has spent decades in the banking industry, beginning in the early 90s and going on to build extensive experience helping businesses navigate growth, financing, cash flow, and operational challenges across a wide range of industries. Today at First Bank, Patrick works closely with entrepreneurial and middle market companies to help connect them with tailored banking and capital solutions designed around how their businesses actually operate. What makes Patrick especially relevant for our audience is his practical needs-based approach to banking. He's not just selling financial products. He's really digging deep and understanding where businesses get stuck, what opportunities they may be missing, and how the right financial structure can support that long-term growth that we're all looking for. And in today's environment, where owners are navigating uncertainty, rising costs, changing lending conditions, and some of the most rapid technological change I think we've seen in decades, those conversations have become more important than ever. So Patrick, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
I'm happy to be here, Edward. Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. So let's take it back to the beginning. You started your banking career in the early 90s.
Had a lot more hair back then, and I think we both did. And I think the question you wanted to pose is, you know, how did I get here? Or, you know, did I wake up and think about being a banker? And to quote Kramer and Newman, if you remember that Seinfeld episode, no, I never woke up and dreamt about being a banker. But what I did know about myself was sales management was a big part of what I do. That coach, that advisory, that consultant role that I play with my business owners, my portfolio, transcends back into mission-based things that I do with coaching. So I think it was kind of a means to an end a little bit, you know, getting through college and working summers and kind of it spoke to me is probably the best way to put it.
And so that's what started the path. What kind of has kept you engaged across the years, even today?
Well, part of it is bringing home a salary. Secondly, is putting my head on my pillow at night, which is important to me. I spent 25 years plus in the credit union industry. And the reason why that resonated with me so much is because I could put my head on my pillow at night. And I felt like I was being responsible in how I conducted business and how I helped people. What kept me engaged in this process through decades is really just, I like helping people, Ed. You know, sitting and talking to you about your business or getting a referral from you or, you know, speaking to a CPA that has a referral. I want to be a trusted partner. And that's what I've carved out in my career. Mm-hmm. And that transcends to a lot of different industries. I know people that have left banking and moved into other industries and they've kept that same DNA. Mm-hmm. The DNA that's important to me is just remaining needs-based solutions, you know, entrepreneurial mindset. It's actually a core competency here at First Bank. And that resonated.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you know, you didn't, there weren't too many moves in your, across your banking career, many years with the Federal Credit Union. And then most recently, First Bank. So was it that entrepreneurial mindset that drew you there? What was it about First Bank that really resonated with you?
No, it's an important question. And it speaks to my DNA probably the most, Ed, is I probably wouldn't have been a good candidate at one of the larger bigs, you know, one of the larger nationals. Mm-hmm. I started my career in commercial banking, back in the early 90s. I went through a lot of M&A. Anyone in their mid-20s probably would have jumped ship at that point with all the M&A that was happening in that space. And I kind of adapted. And how I adapted was I jumped out of the M&A environment, went into credit unions. And I learned a lot spending 25 years plus in that space, whether it's strategic partnerships, whether it was, launching a new department, business banking, spending time in the commercial lending side, building out an MLO program. What resonated the most, though, Ed, is the fact that they were member-centric. Credit unions were member-centric. They're very relationship-based. That's what spoke to me. That always spoke to me. So when I landed at First Bank, when I was recruited here, it wasn't the sexiness of staying below the Driscoll Bridge. I live down the Jersey Shore and I've got a local office down here. But it was also the people, the culture, the fact that we're not we're a grassroots community bank. That speaks to me more than anything because we can get things done quicker. I hope I articulated that okay.
I think you did, and that kind of leads me to something else you described prior to this episode. You said, or you referred to First Bank as both nimble and needs-based. How does that show up in practice for your
That's a
business
good,
clients?
yeah, I say that because listen, I try to differentiate ourselves from the bigs. That's part of what we do. You'd probably do that in your own industry. Our audience does that within their own industry. The reason why that's important to me, I think responsiveness is really important, and I think that speaks to our nimbleness, our community grassroots culture that we have at First Bank. And I honestly, the most important thing when I talk to guys like you, Ed, your audience is localized decision making is key. What attracted me here versus other FIs is I don't have to hand off a deal. I don't have to hand off a relationship because it's over my ceiling, my portfolio ceiling or my lending ceiling. I'm your guy. I'm your guy, for the life of that relationship. And that I like, by the way. I'm not a eat what you kill kind of guy.
I got it. I got
I
it.
don't know if that makes sense or not, but
I think so.
it's hard to really articulate until you really experience it, Ed, until you've developed a relationship with a community bank and kind of seen and kind of experienced the differences between the nationals and the communities. Once you experience that, that's my answer. It's just a
Understood.
different culture. It's just a nicer way to bank.
Got it. And you referenced something before, more oriented towards the earlier part of your career when there was a lot of visible M&A activity in the banking industry. Where do you see that now? Is it still happening, or is it happening at a much lesser rate? Or
No.
is it kind of normalized? Like, where do you see that act moving
Well,
now?
I think it's probably normalized because we're all used to it at this point, So I think to a degree you're right as far as being normalized. It's still an active environment in our space, at a bank that's about 4 billion. We're looking to acquire, and we also might be on the roadmap of some of the larger ones. I hope not, but I think that's realistic, and you're seeing a lot of M&A still in our space. If you look at some of the larger banks that have kind of consolidated, you're seeing some of the communities. I think it's going to keep happening. But I don't think we're ever going to get to a point, at least I hope, where we're going to be like a three bank society. I still think there's room for a lot of, and listen, there's a new bank that just got chartered in New Jersey. So there's definitely room for new bank charters, current bank charters to be sustainable until they get to a point where, but we've got a young CEO here, so I'm thankful that hopefully we'll be First Bank for a long time.
Okay, sounds like there's definitely
Yeah,
room to run and room to grow and
well,
continue.
yeah. You listen, we're trying to be as adaptive as you are in this space, and I think you just have to plan for it. And that's going to be the theme overall here is in what we talk about today is just proper planning.
Speaking of planning and what's on people's minds right now, access to capital, major topic, certainly among a lot of business owners. So what are you hearing most often from business owners in the current environment as it relates to your industry and access to capital?
Oh gosh, that's loaded, isn't it? Because it could be anything. I touch, we're not industry agnostic, or we aren't. So we can go across multiple industries. Everyone is still facing the same challenges. Higher labor costs, higher fuel costs, labor pressures, uncertain economic conditions. Even the, look at Walmart and their earnings right now. I mean, that is, I think, is an indicator of what could be happening within our space and where we lend. I mean, I'm not a Walmart lender, but Walmart is a, I think, a pretty good indicator of how our economy is rolling. And if they're not hitting their peg targets, then we might have to reassess a little bit. And I think that we need to reassess all the time, both as an industry and also for our constituents, the people that we serve.
Understood. So, a lot of times, it would seem that some business owners wait a little too long before engaging their banking partner and starting conversations of kind of where they're at and what's going on. What are some signs that you look for that says, hey, you should be really a little more proactive with this conversation? You should be a little more proactive in engaging your banking partner.
Rapid growth.
Okay.
Listen, growth doesn't always equate to success, but a lot of the time it does. But we want to have responsible growth. So when you've got a period of growth that is a spike, that could be an anomaly. Where it hasn't been planned for, typically what I do is I like to look back at their at a if I'm talking to a client and I look at their 1, 3, 5 year plan. And if that growth isn't embedded in that plan, I want to have more of an explanation of where that came from. Was it targeted? Was it not targeted? Will it be reoccurring? So what we can expect when we do our financial modeling. I hope that answered your question, but a lot of the time I find is, listen, I find that just people don't prepare. They don't do the planning. They're really good at running their business. They're not very good at of taking themselves offline and building out a strategic plan 5 years out. And I think that is imperative, as we talk about cash cycles, as we talk about, geopolitical pressures, we talk about supply chain pressures, we talk about labor cost pressures, healthcare cost pressures, everyone's health costs went up. These are the things I think that have to be, we have to have these conversations frequently. So when I see unprecedented growth or growth models that look a little aggressive, sometimes sometimes that it gets me to start talking with your CPA. Say, what's going on here? And I think that is a good message, I think, for your audience is when you do, I'd like to kind of start the conversation of around before growth happens. So before you've hit that windfall of growth and you're preparing for that growth, start those conversations early with your commercial banker and your CPA. That's the best way. And so we can all kind of work lock, stock and barrel and accomplish your goals.
Understood. Understood. And I assume that also relates to growth that's both organic and growth that's created through acquisition, right? And I'll surmise that First Bank has some vehicles to support that kind of growth too.
Of course we do. Conventional small business, Main Street products, SBA, we have asset-based lending, we have a small PE group. So we have a lot of channels to help. The good, what I like about First Bank is, it's not a one box fits all. Like I'll try to work conventionally where I can, and if I see that there's a collateral shortfall, for example, then we can just pivot to SBA. So there's definitely a roadmap here to help. It's just engaging the right clients, our targeted clients, clients that want a relationship at First Bank. I think that's important for your audience, Ed, even if they don't bank with me, and if they bank with a community, if they bank with a national, I'll have them rethink that. But have a relationship with your banker is imperative. Like get to know them, because you get to know a guy like me, I'm going to go to the mat for you. And I think, and you know that about me.
Absolutely.
And I think that's important. That's an advocate. You want that advocate. And you want there to be a degree of fluidness, between the business owner, your CPA, and your commercial banker. And I think that happens when there's engagement.
And when I was very early in my career, I think it was probably my first year here at DeLea Associates. I think I was at some kind of a function, and it was mentioned like the importance of strength of relationship with your bank.
Yep.
So at the time, my dad was still in the business. So I'm like, "Dad, who's our contact at the bank we use?" He's like, "I don't know. They're down the street, though. Why don't you go find out?"
Yeah, see, and I don't think we're good at that. As bankers, I think we need to be better at that. Even coming from a very service-driven environment, I think the credit unions have maybe fallen off that cliff a little bit around the proactiveness. I mean, it's around passive or non-passive behavior. It's not around product. It's not around pricing that drives these conversations, Ed. You know that. It's around relationships. It's around the experience that we can deliver to engage you, for you to believe that we are going to be your trusted partner, through the bumps and the rainbows of the relationship. I mean, that's our goal. That's our goal. And the experience is hard because we're selling a 2% gallon of milk, right? I mean, you can get a checking account anywhere. Why a community bank? It's because of their nimbleness, their ex access to decision makers, and their ability to be consultative. And I think that still exists within the small regionals and within the small community banks, is that consultative competency that is, I think, really important in how we differentiate. I remember conducting a class back in my two roles ago, back when I was with a larger shop, credit union, and we called it brand culturalization, Ed. And it was around the 2% gallon of milk. Like, why do people make a decision around banking? Like, what's going to drive them to the bank? And when I ask myself that question, when I ask my peers, when I ask my teams, I try to push. It's the table stakes around banking is always going to be price and convenience. You have to have those delivery channels. You always have to be competitive on your yield or your pricing. But I think what stands out in FI, especially community FI, is the experience that we can deliver, and how we engage you as a client, how we help you through thick and thin. And I think that's the most important. I think people will trade that for pricing. I think people will trade that for convenience. Thankfully, we have price and convenience as table stakes. So I want to choose personally my brand. I try to focus on the relationship, on the experience.
Nice. So in your role, you work across SBA lending, conventional lending, and then
Yep.
some other financing solutions for your clients. And this question actually just came up to me. Was looking at a line of credit scenario versus an SBA loan, which didn't even occur to me as a viable option.
Yep.
So how should owners think about what is the right fit, what is the right model, what is the right solution for them? How do you walk somebody through that?
Typically, how we walk that through, first of all, let me unwind and say, I don't want you thinking about what's the best fit for you. I mean, respectfully. I mean, listen, you've got skin in the game. You're ultimately writing that check at every month when you're making a loan payment. But if you have a trusted advisor in place, let him or her do that thinking for you to steer you into the right facility and let you focus on your top line and controlling expenses and, creating profitability. That's probably the best way I would answer that question. Because I don't want to attack this as a product, because it's never a product conversation with any of the meetings I have with prospects, clients. It's about solutions. And the solution could be SBA. Listen, sometimes the solution is not conventional. Sometimes I have to refer a non-conventional partner to offer a quick hit, and that sometimes they have a seat at the table. It's about having that conversation, though, and understanding where those pain points are, understanding where the sense of urgencies are, and meeting them the best we can responsibly.
Understood. So on the SBA side, that landscape seems to continually evolve, right? What changes are you seeing right now, Patrick, that business owners, specifically those that govern family businesses,
Yeah.
what should they be understanding in the here and now?
I would say your audience and larger audiences and smaller audiences, we're going to have the same perspective of SBA. SBA has a stereotype of being cumbersome, maybe a little expensive. Honestly, those stereotypes are somewhat accurate. I think what's changing in the SBA environment is probably more prudent lending is probably the best way to put it, is where the larger 100%, dollar for dollar is going out the door. It's just not there anymore. We're trying to kind of, I think what they're trying to do is scale back both lending and oversight on how the SBA lends. Banks are still going to lean on SBA because they love the guarantee. The guarantee is sexy. You know that. I'm sorry, I have my phone on, Ed, and that is a distraction, and you're going to kill me. I apologize. It's the second time it happened. But what I can say, though, is the SBA is also trying to reinvent itself as well. They have a manufacturing program that they just launched. I think that was in Q4 of last year, that allows term debt, allows lines of credit up to 20 years. Personally, I don't want a line of credit at 20 years. I don't feel comfortable as a commercial banker, but if the SBA is going to advocate for it and help us devise a product, then yeah, let's explore it a little bit. Same thing happened in like grocery. Anyone that touches like food services, for example, I think, increased the guarantee in that specific industry within that segment. SBA is also leaning more on AI, and I know you wanted to talk a little bit about AI. I think the efficiencies that are gained with AI in the SBA space is just how we gather docs. I think it's really helped us along. We're using some AI for some of our spreads, which has helped us along. But at the end of the day, it's still, we're still getting our hands dirty.
I
You
got
know,
it.
we're not, we can't lean on technology too much. We still got to kick the tires. We still got to get our hands dirty. But the SBA, I think, is, listen, they still want to put capital on the street, but they also saw some huge losses. And I don't know how that's going to look in 12 months from now, 6 months from, I just don't know what it's going to look like yet. But as for now, we're allowed, the faucet's open. So if we're if we if I if it makes sense and I can, if it makes sense, then yeah, we're gonna explore that option. But we're gonna explore the conventional side first, typically.
Okay, I understand. So, peel back the hood if you could a little bit and
Oh
answer.
boy.
What do you think most business leaders in ownership or leadership most commonly misunderstand about the lending process, or what banks like a First Bank are actually looking for when they're in the process of discussions, or whether it be a loan, an SBA, or some other financial vehicle?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that, and my first response to that, Ed, is this is almost like a fall on your sword moment. Where banks, I don't think banks do a good job in this space explaining the why or the how come. I just don't think we do. I think as a community bank, I think we're better at it than most. I still think we have room to improve. There's always a learning curve. Not everyone is going to be an SME and SBA. I mean, I have to be an SME. I'm basically a generalist. I have to have competencies in every facet of this bank the best I can. And then, of course, glean on my experience. But yeah, I think the hard part there, Ed, is exactly what I said, is just getting better at explaining the process, explaining what makes the most sense versus kind of, I don't want to say dictating, but having more of a conversation. And I think we need to be better at that as an industry. I'm not just going to throw shade on First Bank. I think as an industry, I think we need to be a lot better in that space.
So beyond lending, when we were talking prior to this episode, you'd mentioned cash management and operational banking solutions. Talk more about some of those and why they might be, overlooked by a fast growing or a growing business.
Yeah, that's a tricky one, because when I thought about that, profitable businesses, growing and profitable businesses can also experience liquidity pressure, for example. And that's going to happen when you grow quickly. The first thing that's going to get hit is the pressure on your liquidity, and the second thing that's going to get hit is your liquidity preservation, for example. So in order for us to really have a seat at the table and help businesses get through this transitional period, we lean on banking efficiencies the best we can. whether it's our ACH platforms, it's wiring money. I mean, you know how many people, Ed, still drive to the bank and make their deposits? There is too many. And I know the branches are thankful for those transactions and they love it. I tend to steer my clients towards the digital. I just think it's more efficient. And when we can embrace the digital functionality benefits that banks like us and the largers have to offer, you're only going to benefit as a business owner, because you're just going to turn your cash cycle will be quicker. And at the end of the day, I think that's what we're all trying to do, is just increase your cash cycle. But that's tough to do when you're growing, when you're spending money on inventory, for example, and you're not going to see that cash cycle come back real quick. Same goes for your AR. Same goes for new hires, for example, your labor costs. Those cash cycles are going to take a while. So again, this all dovetails back, and I sound like a broken record. It dovetails back to just proper planning. It's just planning through, the hard times, the thin, the thick. There's just a lot of uncertainty, and I think a lot of it is driven globally, unfortunately. So I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. I'm just trying to help people, Ed. That's
Yeah,
just
I
I just
get
want to
you.
be a guy. I want to be your guy, and I want to be your audience's guy. I think that's the where I'm trying to carve out a role,
Understood.
and I'll give it to you straight.
Well, that's why you're on, Patrick. So, let's bring it around to the more specifically to our audience, which is the family-owned companies, and you work with and have worked with many across the span of your career. As you kind of take that look back, what do you think, Patrick, separates the businesses that can scale successfully from those that seem to be constantly under financial strain?
It's planning, Ed. I hate it. I hate to say it, because it's not like I want there to be kind of an epiphany here. Like, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. No, I'm not brilliant. I've just been doing this a long time. And what I've seen, the companies that do that scale successfully, plan successfully. That it's that simple, Ed. There's too many people that are just immersed in their business and they let someone else plan for them. Like, they think their CPA is kind of taking that role, and unless they have a fractional CFO at their disposal, that might not be happening. That's likely not happening. And that would also be another resource for your audience. There's great resources out there in that arena, in that fractional arena. And that's also part of my role here, Ed, is not at a functional level, but if at a functional level I'm here to serve and I'm here to help, then I'm also availing my entire network to you. So if you need someone, my God, I just talked to someone about marketing this morning and your name came up. So it's kind of like what we do. And I love about a community, small regional, is we like to kind of keep it in the family.
That's
And
cool.
I think that's smart, because if I can feed you and you bank with me, we all benefit.
That's right. That's right. So, we touched on it earlier, but let's dig into it a little deeper. So the subject of AI, which seems to be front and center in every conversation. So we're entering a period where AI and automation are certainly changing how companies operate or will operate. How do you think business banking and financial services will evolve over the next few years as it relates to AI and the adaptation of AI?
I would love to know that question. I would love to have a real good handle on that question, Ed, and that's one that I'm still struggling with. I see functionally how we're embracing AI a little bit from an underwriting standard. And how we can drive. And again, there's always got to be a cause and effect. So we're trying to solve for efficiencies or inefficiencies. So if we can leverage AI to drive more efficiencies, then yes, it's helped us. Where I think AI is going to help your audience specifically is more around kind of maybe payment collection, like AR, managing your receivables, your payables better, your inventory controls. I think a lot of that could be driven through AI, where it's not currently, I think, right now for the majority of our audience. And I think once your audience embraces that, I think that'll be a trigger. That'll be an operational trigger or an operational efficiency trigger, which will hopefully just ripple through the organization, at a favorable level.
And I've found that the pace of change right now, as it relates to technology, as it relates to AI, is staggering.
It
I mean, we're
it's
reading and
framing.
learning. I mean, we're reading and learning about things that, you know, because we're fairly well down the path and have been for several years. Things that I almost wouldn't even want to bring to my audience's attention. Because it's like the step beyond, you
Oh,
know,
100%.
and
And the other
it's getting very kind of almost like esoteric in terms of what could be, you know, that it's bizarre.
it
But
is. And on the point of AI that I'll mention, and this was brought this someone said this to me and I just laughed about it because I just thought it, and it's a nice segue to what you just said. AI is as smart as Einstein, but it has the moral compass of a child. And that's frightening when you lean on it too much. So listen, do I lean on AI when I'm building out a business report? Or yeah, sometimes. Will I lean on AI when I'm looking at industry specific forecasts? Of course. That's all of that is available to us both as professionals and consumers for that matter. You know, and I think you're doing the same thing as a business owner, and your audience is doing the same thing as business owners. I think you just kind of leverage it responsibly. And you know, and but around the fiscal side of it, I would say the most impactful would probably be on the payment side. I think that's the most. I don't see any huge changes happening in how we operate. You know, if you know, if we were doing business together, Ed, and we're doing a lot more business together, and we, you know, we have, I don't see banking is real. Banking doesn't have to be complicated, Ed. At the end of the day, it's money in and money out. We don't have, don't, let's not overcomplicate it. AI will, I think, help you maybe then more so than it'll help my industry for the short term. That's where I kind of, that's where I'm landing on AI at the moment. But I
Cool.
will leverage it for spreads because if we can save an FTE cost or of a processor or an underwriter and leverage, you know, some small biz AI underwriting platforms, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Understood. So, as it relates to if you think about some of the family governed businesses that you work with, have worked with, or maybe working with right now, what's your sense of their readiness for the pace of change that's occurring right now? Are they ready? Are they, you know, what's a long-winded way of saying what's the word on the street as it relates to the family
Yeah.
businesses you know and work with?
No, I listen, the ones that are ready think they're ready. That's probably accurate. You know, and listen, they think they're ready because they plan and they put the time in. The ones that aren't ready are probably gravely not ready for the change that's happening. For, you know, listen, we're coming out of a high rate environment. We've got a lot of geopolitical, how do we, crises is the best way to put it. That's going to slow supply chain and so slow everything. I mean, God, even building a plastic chair, you know, that's coming from China because, you know, they need oil, you know, they need petroleum to build that chair. It's, everything is so interrelated. I honestly, Ed, and I hate to say it, it's just the planning side. If I don't know how to emphasize that enough, where proper planning kind of gets you that to that comfort level where you then you keep testing your model and you keep testing your plan. Plans are fluid. Plans are meant to be revisited frequently. And I talk to too many businesses in family govern SMB space that are great at what they do, but they're not strategic. And I think what happens in times of uncertainty or when there's pressures put on businesses, business owners will revert back to being tactical. And I think that's the worst thing that can happen because you need to stay strategic because those that can adapt to that change are the ones that are going to succeed.
True, true.
And the ones that are being tactical are putting out fires and kind of weathering storms. I look at change, Ed, you've known me a very long time. I look at change as almost opportunity. Change will create opportunity. You know, I think where we're at right now as an economy is creating opportunity for entrepreneurs. What that opportunity looks like is all relative to the mindset. But I believe that. And those that aren't preparing, you better hurry up.
Well, one thing that I've been thinking of, and as we were talking, And I think it's a good takeaway for the audience. So those of us that are planners, and as you know, I'm a planner, and we have a plan for the year and the next 3 years, the next 5 years and all that, and the quarter down to the week, right? So we're pretty disciplined. But what, sort of my aha moment in our conversation is, I don't know that I've ever sat down with any of our banking relationships and said, hey, by the way, here's our plan,
No one does. No one does unless you need something.
and I don't know if that mindset was just because it felt unnecessary, or I wasn't quite sure what they would do with that information, or if they needed it, or if it wasn't really asked for, but
No, you
it
bring up a
seems
good
to be a
point.
benefit, to doing that and having that shared discussion, to say, hey, here's where we're going. And I wanted you to know, because this is how you're going to fit into the master plan. And here's where we're going to
Yeah,
be meeting you. And, maybe through a banker's lens, you could say, all right, you might hit some friction points here and here, and okay, if you're going to do this, here's where you're going to have to be. And this is the kind of, this is probably the cash flow you're going to need to support that or whatever. So, I think there'd be a value to that lens.
I agree. When you look at planning, you can incorporate increasing the frequency of cash flow forecasting. You can look at managing your AR and your AP more closely, your inventory controls. Where your lender, where your commercial banker will come in, will be more around your debt structure and your interest exposure. And once we have that full picture, then we're really kind of have a good game plan. When you do the heavy lifting and then you incorporate the team that you that's your team, I think you've got all the right tools. It's just doing the work, Ed. It's doing the work, baby.
There you go. So, looking back, you've had a great career, all in one industry. And you've seen a lot. You've seen a lot of different economic cycles. You've seen a lot of disruptions, right? As you look back and look kind of to the present, what are some of the lessons learned in your experience that you see a lot of business owners, specifically in the family business space, that are still they're still not fully seeing, or maybe putting a blind eye to? What are the lessons from the past that could serve us well in the here and now?
Listen, I think around. That's a very big question. I think what resonates with me in that question, Ed, is operational discipline. I think, listen, you're never going to want to stop growth. Growth, that growth engine doesn't ever have to, it doesn't stop. It should never stop. But where I think there needs to be kind of more vision, more attention is around operational discipline, leadership structure, visibility into long-term growth. And I think once you start having those conversations, mapping it out, revisiting, I don't know. I think we can get to a point where we all win. I mean, isn't that that's what we're all trying to do? I mean, I want your whole audience as customers at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, though, it's also got to be a good fit. And it's got to be a good fit. And I'll never try to crowbar a solution just to win business. That's not who we are. That's not who I am, Ed. That's probably not why you have me on today. It's about, listen, it's about providing guidance, consultative experience that you can glean off, that you can win off of. I mean, I want you to win. I want all your clients to win. And if I can help them do that responsibly, I think that's what we're trying to do. But yeah, I think what we need to reiterate, proper planning, operational discipline, cash flow management. And then start a conversation with your banker and your attorney and your accountant. Like, get a team together. Get them to know each other. Like, invite them to dinner. I don't know what the solution is, but I find most of the deals that I work on are a lot smoother when I've got those relationships already kind of tenured, matured.
Yeah, sounds good. So that's leading into my final question. If any of our listeners did want to connect with you, Patrick, to learn more about your journey, your story, what you can do in your capacity, or to learn about First Bank, what's the best way for them to connect?
I would hit me right on LinkedIn, or of course my email. I know a lot of my contact information will be part of the podcast, but LinkedIn's probably the easiest. And I'll have you publish my phone number when it's appropriate. And we're a relationship bank, and that's my personal cell, so anyone's welcome to it.
Great, thanks. I appreciate that. So to wrap
Oh,
it,
we appreciate it.
what stands out, Patrick, in terms of your perspective is that strong banking relationships are far more than transactions. And at their best, it's about helping businesses think strategically about growth, structure, risk, long-term sustainability, and above all, as was cited many times, planning and the importance of planning. For the family-owned companies especially, having the right financial guidance and access to capital can make a meaningful difference in how we confidently can navigate both change and opportunity, as we spoke about. So, Patrick, I really appreciate you sharing your perspectives and your experiences today. Again, we've been speaking with Patrick McDermott, Vice President, Commercial Sales and Relationship Banking for First Bank. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ed. Have a great weekend. And thanks to all the veterans out there.
Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleanet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.